expectedly mentioned in the introduction, I want to send one disclaimer and say that this has nothing to do with what I do for my work at the Max Planck Institute for Informatics. So I also do free software, and that's what this is about. Okay, and I actually wanted to start a bit with my motivation here. So a bit of a very, very short story, one of conviction and passion, because this is really a passion project for me. I'm Lawrence, and I contribute to Radical, and you might be wondering, okay, I mean, you will find out what it is, right? But why? Maybe you have read the intro. Why do we do this? And so on. And FOSDEM is developer-focused, and we learn about lots of interesting technologies here. We have learned a lot about peer-to-peer technologies. And Radical is a project that really wants to bring this back to software development in one particular way. So it's about the future home for open source. I like Git. You could substitute this with other version control systems, of course. I think Git is pretty fine. But what I really like is the decentralized part of Git, right? The way it was designed to be used, the fact that you do not rely on a central party. And I don't like decentralized Git, which unfortunately is what large parts of the software ecosystem in general have gravitated to. So in the free software world, maybe not as much, but in like the commercial part and also the overlap between commercial software, large companies, and free software, there's a big, big centralization effect. There's this big pull to GitHub and a few other forges. Of course, there are people that run their own, I don't know, GitLab instances, Forgeho instances, and so on. But if you really look at the size of GitHub and decentralization going on there with one company controlling this, this is just frightening, right? So Radical goes back and asks, okay, what about decentralized Git? How can we make this decentralized Git work? What is actually needed? So the idea behind Radical is not to come up with some completely different source control software. It's just, okay, we take Git, which works, which is widely known, and then we figure out, okay, how can we make it work so that this kind of scales and is one approach to use Git in a peer-to-peer and decentralized way again. Okay, so it turns out that I saw Radical and what it does with Git and how it works out, and that's why I'm here today. That's why I started working on this. So, yes, it's about this future home of open source, and I mean, yes, I will present Radical today, but anything you can do to work on the decentralization of your software development stack will be beneficial. Like, we need way more ideas in this space. There are other ideas. Just to mention, I have already said, like, Forgeho before, they are looking into federation. There are also alternatives like Tangled, building on top of AT protocol. There are people that just run their own Git servers. These are all valid in their own sense, right? Just because I'm presenting Radical today, I'm not trying to invalidate any of these other ideas. I'm just presenting one in this whole toolbox. And to my knowledge, Radical is the most advanced peer-to-peer forge I know. If you know any better, then let's talk. But so far, I think we are pioneering the peer-to-peer part of this. Okay, and maybe to drive home why it's the strongest, I think, or how it became the strongest. It's a project that has been going for a while and has tried out different ways of doing this. So there were previous iterations that were based on IPFS, influenced by Secure Scuttlebutt and things like this. These were the previous iterations. Now it just works on top of Git, uses Git to synchronize. So really when you synchronize on the Radical network, you just do the Git synchronization protocol and not some other file system, file sharing protocol. And Radical is now developed on Radical since roughly 3 years now. And we have released version 1.0 quite a while ago, and we're now at 1.6.1 and pushing onwards. Our release cadence is roughly one release every 1.5 months currently, and we are trying to get to one release per month. Right, so we actually have, luckily, we have two talks about Radical at FOSDEM. You are now in the talk that is more focused on the peer-to-peer stuff. Radical also is like also very much influenced by the local first idea, which obviously ties in well together with peer-to-peer. But I will be not talking so much about the local first aspect of it. If you are interested in that, FintoHaps will be talking about that basically right after my talk in a different building, in a different developer room, just so you know, okay? So you can also check this out. And this is in particular for our social artifacts, because if you think about patches for code review, think about pull requests, issue tracking, and so on, if you just naively put that into Git, check in a todo.txt file or something, then you will get like merge conflicts on your todo.txt, which is, yeah, not really nice to work with. So we use CRDTs to work around that. But as I said, this is not this talk, it's the other one. So this talk will be about more the peer-to-peer aspects. So there are no servers, there's gossiping between peers. There is no central user database like with GitHub, GitLab, and the likes, also not with the federated setups where at every federation point you have a user database, so we don't do that. And the idea is, of course, that users of the Radical protocol kind of share their storage and their availability. So you should be able to contribute to the network in that sense. Maybe one detail here is you probably know that on GitHub you can star a repository, and oftentimes we get the question, okay, how do we do that on Radical? And our answer usually is, well, forget about just starring and incrementing a counter in a database. We suggest you just replicate that very repo, which means you download a copy of that repo to your computer and you make it available to be shared by others, which we think is much more sensible than just putting a star on some website, but okay. And the user is always in control. This decision of which repo do you want on your machine is yours, and there's no way that we will ever like interfere with that, of course. Just so you get a better idea of what this like looks like, the look and feel as a Radical user, I still want to go through the three main interfaces that we have before we get started. So there, of course, is a CLI interface. You can see here that this is just a list of repositories that I have. On the very left, you have the name, the repository ID, which is some sort of hash, the visibility of the repository. So you can see that most of the repositories I have on my machine are public, but there's also the possibility to have private repositories. The head of the repository and the description. Then we have a way to obviously inspect which other peers your node is connected to. So this is just basically the list of connections you currently have in the network. By default, your node, if you don't change any setting, will attempt to hold 8 connections. So it will attempt to mesh out to 8 other nodes. Which then makes it usually very quickly to converge on the latest status of a repository. Two onion nodes are shown here. I didn't configure the connection properly, but onion connections are supported out of the box. Or I think I disabled it on when I did that screenshot. Then you have things like patches. So this is the history of a patch. Think about it as a merge request or pull request, so you can see the updates, you can see the revisions that were posted. These revisions are immutable, which makes a lot of sense for reviewing. So when someone posts a new revision, you have this clearly identified thing, what is a revision, not something floating around on a website that changes and so on. And then there's a list of patches where you can get the status. We also have a desktop application which essentially shows the same information, but you know it's not a CLI, it's a desktop app. You can also search through your so this is a repository listing on a different machine on a desktop app, right? And you can do so actually the code review features are a bit more advanced on the desktop app. You can do like line comments and so on. And then we also have a web application, which to be fair, looks a lot like the others. So the code websites you already know. Just makes it a little bit easier to find out more about the radical metadata, like who owns the repository, what is the repository ID, and so on. Right. And now a bit about the high-level design. As I mentioned in my introduction, we build on top of Git, okay? So we try to use as much of Git and its nice features as possible. So by using Git, we immediately get like content addressability, immutability of data, an efficient sync protocol, and relatively wide acceptance. So by putting, for example, all the social artifacts like issues and patches into Git, we also get efficient syncing of these, right? We also get these nice immutability effects that a revision of a patch is, in some sense, it's not exposed to you as that, but it's in some sense a commit, so it has also a commit ID and it's immutable. And yeah, this makes it relatively easy to also replicate and so on. But Git, I mean, if Git would have been the perfect peer-to-peer system to do development, then people wouldn't have jumped onto GitHub, right? So there is something that is missing. That's the reason part of the reason why this ecosystem even developed in the way it did. And we think there are a few important aspects. So we have to add something on. So globally unique repository addresses. Well, now if you go around here and watch different talks, in many of these talks, you will see github.com/something. So obviously I know that technically it's not the one de facto global unique address space, but it's certainly the address space that is controlled by github.com, and these addresses have become very prevalent. So if someone reads off their slide and wants to mention the repository, they will usually even omit the prefix github.com, and they will just say, you know, this slug component of the URL. This is something that is, of course, very, very valuable. What we are doing is we have a way to globally and uniquely address repositories. In our case, this is a hash, and you can look up repositories via the hash name, and then from there you can look at different metadata of the repository, which also contains a human readable name and so on. But we think that this lack of global addressing is a bit of a problem, or where we want to improve Git, because what doesn't seem to work is that you have many different Git servers and you have to configure remotes all by yourself, right? If you want to have lots of connections to different remotes because you are in a peer-to-peer network, with just plain Git, you would have to set up each and every remote. So for every collaborator you want to work with, you would probably have a remote, and for each collaborator, you would have to think about addressing that collaborator, like what is maybe their IP address, or which is the onion service that they are running, and so on. And we want to step away from that and address all repositories the same as kind of a view onto the network. Then, of course, you need something for metadata. As I mentioned before, this metadata of a human readable name is important, but it's slightly more than that. It's like who governs the repository, who gets decide to push to which branch of the repository, what are like extension points for the repository, like maybe you want to also note where you can find mirrors of the repository and so on. So we also have a schema for that, and we do access control over this, and you can actually, we have a mechanism to to share the ownership of this repository metadata and identity document, which then doesn't live at one person's namespace, but at the namespace of the repository. And if, for example, you want to migrate a repository that's like a regular Git repository onto Radical, then basically the only thing you do is you create a new address that is based on the initial metadata and work from there. And if you ever need to take up the work of someone else, like the project went dormant and you want to revive it and you want to bring it to Radical, you can still do that. You also, if you are in the case that you have to fork a repository on Radical, then what you would do is you create a new address for it and add the respective metadata. And something I've also watched the talk this morning about PGP and the nicety of a completely self-sovereign identity. And that's also something that Radical supports. So in Radical, every user is really self-sovereign. So it's just an Edwards 255.19 key. And from there on, this is how we bootstrap everything, right? We lack a few features, I have to be honest, in terms of like migrating your key, exporting your key, multi-device, and so on. But this is all on our roadmap. And this idea that the user is in full control over their identity is still fully respected. Yes, and the discovery of replicas, of course, if you think about just using Git alone and you want to discover who else might have an interesting copy because they have written a patch or so without any server, would get really tricky to set up the remotes and everything. So Radical also, of course, the nodes in the peer-to-peer network, they will discover each other, and this is how you can step, you can solve the problem of how you discover someone else's work, basically. Okay, so I'm going to start with what happens after a push. So suppose you're working on a Radical repository, you have implemented something nice, you made a commit, now you're pushing. Git push in this case is local first, right? So what happens when you push code on Radical is not that it connects to some server and pushes the code there, but the operation for in the first step is actually local, right? So this is implemented using a mechanism that's standard called Git remote helpers. So we have implemented a Git remote helper, which just moves the objects that you're pushing, so the commit and the tree inside of it, and recursively the trees and the blobs and everything, so basically your changes, moves them across only on the file system. So moves them to a specific other Git repository that you have in your file system that maps one-to-one to your working copy. And this is very fast usually because it's just on the same file system. And then there is a long-running process which we call the Radical node, which will pick up these changes and announce these changes and the changes to your references to the local network. Okay, so you will never actually push to some other node. We just still kept this nice mental model of pushing, because this gives a clear separation of what is your working copy, like your checkout, the one that you work on locally, where you have maybe intermediate commits that you're not willing to share with anyone, that you're still cleaning up, you're rebasing, maybe you use JJ, so you will do all kinds of crazy things. And then you have a Git push step, which then maps to, okay, now I'm pushing my changes to the network. But what's really happening is you're just pushing it locally, and then you get an announcement.
Does pushing wait for the changes to be asked in the network?
By default, yes, but you can disable that. So the question was, does pushing wait for the changes to propagate over the network? By default, yes, there are some settings. The default settings are you can nominate preferred seeds for which you want to receive a confirmation that they have received your changes, and you have a replication factor which by default is 3, so you wait for 3 other nodes to confirm that they have received your changes, and then the push will be completed. but you can configure it to not wait. So the like all of this announcement just goes on in the background, which then means it's really fast. A follow-up question. The question was, what happens if the radical node is not running? I will answer that on the next slide, okay? So the radical node, these clients, which I briefly showed before, we have CLI, desktop, we have a TUI that I did not show, we have an HTTP daemon, which gives you basically an HTTP bridge, which is optional, which I also didn't show, but they interact with Radical via two pathways. So first is Radical Storage, which is this other location where we keep a copy of the Git repository with more namespaces, and there is the Radical Node process, right? And so the push that I actually mentioned before interacts with them both. The push first pushes to the radical storage, so it updates radical storage, and then it notifies the radical node that there should be an announcement sent to the network. And so the question was, what happens when the radical node is offline? Well, then only the first part will happen, so you will push to storage, and then the remote helper will realize that the node is offline, and it will actually tell you, you just did an offline push. The reason is that your node is offline. When the node comes online, it will be announced to the network. And the way we can detect this is that we have a different connection to the node as well. So this is just a Unix socket, where you just exchange JSON messages. I mean, you don't do that yourself, of course, but the CLI will, and the Git remote helper will do that. And they will see, okay, there's no radical node running on the other side, and then they will tell you, you can start it using rad node start, and if you do that, then you will get the announcement.
Is this radical node, is it a system-wide process, or is it every user should run it?
The question was whether radical node is a system-wide process or a user process. You can do both. The recommendation is for like an end user machine, like you as a developer, you would run it for yourself. But we also have the setup of people that just want to use a server or some other machine, the Raspberry Pi that you have lying in your cellar or whatever, to replicate over the network. And for these people, they would run it as a system service. The question is, what is the mechanism for activating the service? So we distribute systemd config files, and we also have the possibility to just use radnode start, which will just fork off the process and keep it in the background. But I think I can answer more detailed questions after the talk, if that's fine.
Are the systemd service socket activated?
Yes, the systemd service can be socket activated. So. And then this peers to other nodes. So the initial question is, of course, how do I find an initial node to peer with? Currently, we do bootstrapping via two nodes that we run. These nodes are also reachable via Tor using Onion services, and we have conceptually we have figured out how to use DNSSD in the future, but it's not yet implemented. And we might also combine this with a DHT in the future. So for now, things are working quite well, but we understand that bootstrapping via some specific node might not be as resilient. And of course, I can also mention this later if there's a question, but of course you can basically connect to your own network, okay? So you don't have to use these bootstrap servers. You can use any particular configuration. Okay, so now I want to talk about the peer-to-peer connections. So what is actually this connection between two radical nodes? It's a noise connection over TCP, and inside this TCP connection, or inside the noise wrapped TCP connection. We have a simple multiplexer. The design is inspired by QUIC, and there are basically two sub-protocols in there. One is the Git protocol, which is just for syncing, so it's really the Git push and fetch, you know. And then we have the gossip protocol, which is to announce metadata, which is the things that I mentioned, which Git itself doesn't natively support. And the thing can also be configured to run over Tor using socks out of the box, so it's relatively easy to do that. And to be honest, like, this protocol is relatively simple. I will now go into the details of the messages that are being exchanged, but this is not rocket science, okay? So I will just mention messages of two different kinds. I will omit informational messages. They are not really important, and keep alive messages. So you're left with three different kinds of announcements that your node will send, and one subscription message that your node will send. So what can you announce? You can first of all announce the node. Okay, so the node can say, hello, this is my public key. These are the addresses that I'm willing to share with the network. Of course, you don't have to share any addresses for connecting to your node. One of these addresses can, of course, be Onion service. So this is all like making your node connectable by others is like all opt-in and can be done via Tor. And the second message is you can announce the inventory of your node, which basically is the list of repositories that you have. This must also somehow be known. And finally, per repository, you can announce that a reference has, or the list of references has changed. So when you push, you would change, I don't know, say refs heads main in your namespace, and this is basically the content of the announcement. Note that all the refs are signed using your own identity, so these can be also relayed, and when you actually receive, like when your node decides to fetch these changes from another node, it can be cryptographically verified that these are the commits that were originally signed by the user who owns the specific reference namespace. This is not very complicated. It's just three different layers of granularity of things that you want to announce through the network. And then on the other side, you have subscription messages, which are currently just bloom filters over the repository IDs, which also include a start and end point. So you can basically say the validity of a subscription, and also it's usually pretty simple. You would usually subscribe to the repositories that you have on your machine because you're interested in getting new information about them. Okay. Before I close off, I think I have around 2 minutes left. The network today. I want to just show you, okay, I talked to you about these nice ideas and all of these concepts. How big is this thing? We have one node which just measures activity on the network, and I just want to show you some numbers. So the number of repositories, so here this is, okay, you cannot see my pointer, but just here in the middle of the screen, there's this number 25. This is the change of the year. So to the left, we have 2024, and then to the right, we have 2025. And just recently, we switched over to 2026, of course. And the number of repositories is growing, let's say, roughly somewhat linear, around 5,000 repositories with a bit of pickup. The number of nodes has been increasing a bit recently, so the number of weekly active nodes, let's say, is around maybe a bit more than 400, maybe it's 450, more 100, maybe 500. Let's see how many of those stay active. But it's not just five nodes, okay? So people are using this. people are using this. We also have permissive seed nodes, which just will pick up any new repository and will start replicating it. The number of pushes is also picking up a bit. So it's quite nice to see this metric that people are just pushing more code. The number of patches is also picking up a bit. We have more than 30,000 patches on the network currently. I will skip over this. And in the road ahead, we know that we still have room to grow. We can improve our peer-to-peer technology, but the point is that Radical is in a place where this is all possible. Okay, so we have not maneuvered ourselves in a world where we now have to go back to servers or whatever. We will make it much better. I cannot go into detail. One thing is multi-device support that we're working on, and feel free to talk to me anytime. I will be at the Open Local First after party today. Check us out online, and thanks very much for listening.